From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from East Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, 2 blocks up from Haight.
I'm from Sunset.
A foggy inner sunset.
I live in the Mesh.
Coming up, we get some neighborhood safety tips from a top cop.
We talked about neighborhoods turning their front porch lights on and keeping them on.
Then we visit a Sausalito recording studio with a famous, or perhaps infamous, past.
What I first saw was a piano with Frank Zappa sticking out of it with his legs in the air, and he was plucking the strings of the piano, and he jumped out of the piano saying, "Who are you and what the f*** do you want?"
And we'll take a trip to a music festival that's pure Tejano, but in California. We're swinging around the Bay today on Cross Currents. Just a few weekends ago in Oakland, 12 people were shot, three of them fatally, within a 24-hour period. It's a snapshot of a difficult reality some residents are facing over there, which includes robberies going up 30% from this time last year. Even in traditionally safer neighborhoods like Rock Ridge, residents are scared to go out at night. These citizens had a chance to meet their new police captain to address their concerns last week. KALW's Kyungjin Lee was there and came back with this postcard.
So it depends on the neighbor's interest.
Yeah.
You know, because we talked about soup nights, you know, like once a month or something like that, walks. So...
Well, suit night seems a lot more fun than having a gun waved in your face.
Crime-fighting ideas are flowing at this Rock Ridge community meeting. More than 40 residents and business owners are informally chatting with their area captain, Anthony Toribio. They're here to discuss the latest bait of robberies to hit Rock Ridge. Toribio says he's available for talks like these thanks to a restructuring of the department. It went from 2 districts to 5, with a captain for each area.
And here's the Reader's Digest version. The benefit to the community is that you have a captain that has a smaller, more manageable area and now has more time and more responsibility, so to speak, to address quality of life issues and operational things. Right. So a couple
in his talk,
ago,
Toribio shares some patterns he's been seeing in local muggings.
When an individual resists, that suspect is more likely than not to use force on that individual, right? We've had pistol whippings. We've had a couple of instances where shots have been fired.
And he offers advice on how they can avoid becoming victims.
Some strategies, like if you're driving home and you're pulling in your driveway, to honk your horn. We talked about neighborhoods turning their front porch lights on and keeping them on. Right?
Toribio also explains how he and the department usually deploy officers, but he says these days more resources are being sent to East Oakland, where shootings and killings have spiked. It resonates with the crowd, but Candace Jansen-Marson says the explanations don't ease her concerns.
It's great that you're here, and it's really great that there are a lot of neighbors here. Brian and I were robbed last week, and having 3 armed robberies on the same block in 1 week is totally terrifying. And we're spreading the word among all our friends about don't go out at night in Rock Ridge. And it's nice to talk to you, but nothing I'm hearing makes me feel safer about being on the street at night.
I'm doing as much as I can with what I have. And I'm open to any ideas or suggestions. And then also, you know, what as a community can you do to protect yourself better?
Some of the answers that we have with the limitations of the police department is the community, both residents and merchants, haven't been as proactive as could be.
More residents ask questions, then brainstorm ways to get organized.
Yeah, I mean, if we got this many people at least, and then all these people told more people, that would be a lot of people. I mean, at least at the meeting, they were like, well, we don't really have funding for flyers and stuff. I think between all of us, we could flyer all of Rock Ridge.
Can we go further? I just want to follow up on this point of connecting the community, right? Now, I can get the NSC to help and the problem-solving officer to contribute, but we need some volunteers to take charge and bring this together.
When Toribio says NSC, he's talking about a neighborhood service coordinator, They manage Oakland's neighborhood crime prevention councils.
But see, you're talking about work and volunteers and people stepping up. So who's willing to...
So I'm raising my hand.
Okay, good. So, yeah, great.
While it won't necessarily get every resident involved, if it doubles the number of people who are paying attention, that's so much more than we have right now. And I think that's worth it, to put our effort into that. Because the systems exist. Like you're saying, NCPC exists. What's missing is the people being plugged into it. And so I think if we did that kind of approach and then relied on the tools that we have now, we might make a lot more progress.
What are you talking about? Like going door to door and letting people know?
I would love that. I think it would be the most effective. I do think it takes a lot of volunteer hours, and I don't know...
Here's a sign-up sheet. My name's on there. I'm going to give this to you.
As the meeting comes to a close, the residents and captain agree to work together on reviving a neighborhood watch group. It's the main action item for their next meeting, and everyone seems motivated to do their part.
Hey, thank you for attending. I'm sorry that crime is such an issue up here that it's negatively impacting your life. It bothers me, and hopefully this is a start of good things that we can implement and make our neighborhood safer.
These community meetings are part of the new effort of Oakland Police to engage with residents over what's going on in their neighborhoods. Residents may not always get a speedy response from the police, but a chance to be heard and build relationships is a start. In Rockridge, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
What does your community do to prevent crime in your neighborhood? What do you wish it would do? Let us know on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now we turn to a community with a rowdy reputation, rock stars. The Bay Area is known for inspiring all kinds of great music, including rock and roll. In the 60s and 70s, groups like Creedence Clearwater and the Grateful Dead called it home. Even in Little Sausalito over in Marin County, there was a destination that drew recording artists from all over the world. The Record Plant, later known as just The Plant, was the premier resort studio. It offered artists an unparalleled hotel-like experience under a cloak of absolute privacy. The plant shut down in 2008, but recently it got a new lease on life, so to speak. KALW's Liz Pfeffer went to find out more about the historic building's future as well as its past.
It's impossible to miss the entrance to the Record Plant. It has two huge wooden doors with carvings of a pig wailing on a trumpet, a fox playing the drums, and various musical animals. This is an homage to Sly and the Family Stone, but everyone from Aretha Franklin to the Eagles has made their way through these doors.
Jennifer?
How are
That's
you?
Jennifer Adler.
Nice to finally meet you.
She's the building's current tenant, and she offered to give me a tour of the place.
Yeah, so we are standing in the front entrance of what formerly was known as the Record Plant.
Her lease won't let her remove the gold records on the walls or any of the other nostalgic design elements. That's why this is so much more than a building. It's a catacomb of music history.
On the right, over here, you see the original invites from the Halloween Masquerade Ball about, 40 years ago.
Adler points to hundreds of wooden yin-yangs displayed on a wall just inside the doors. These were invites to the Record Plant's infamous opening party.
They're signed individually by the artists. So this one is signed by George Harrison.
The invites read October 29, 1972, Masquerade Ball, Dancing, BYOD. D is for drugs. I want to tell everybody all about my plan. The guests were a who's who of famous musicians at the time, Buddy Miles was the live entertainment. John Lennon was there, who famously arrived with Yoko Ono dressed as trees. Record Plant co-founder Chris Stone remembers it well.
It was a very successful party. People came up from Los Angeles. People came, of course, all the people in San Francisco and Marin County came. And at 10 o'clock the next morning, it was still going.
Stone and his business partner, Gary Kellgren, came to Sausalito that year after opening successful studios in New York and Los Angeles. The Record Plant completed their trifecta, but it was different than the others. As Stone says, it was designed to be the first resort studio the recording industry had ever seen.
Think of yourself going on vacation in Hawaii, and you check into the hotel, and everything is there. Anything you want to do, pretty much you can do by picking up the phone. You know, we tried not to tempt you. We just let it be known that pretty much whatever you wanted, we could get for you.
Stone was the business guy in the partnership. He managed relationships with record labels and kept artists happy and productive. Kellgren, who had a background in sound engineering, focused on the creative side of things. It didn't take long for them to prove the Record Plant successful.
Good evening. This is Tom Donahue, and once again, we're live from Record Plant in Sausalito.
By 1973, the Record Plant had built quite the reputation for making great music and memorable parties. I asked Chris Stone if he had any wild stories from that time.
Oh, yes, but we can't talk about that.
Even though he hasn't owned the studio in decades, Stone still values the trust that musicians put in him back then.
They told me their secrets, their inner dark secrets, because they trusted me. And if I came out, my whole reputation would be ruined and I would be a bad guy.
So we're walking through here.
Back on my tour with Jennifer Adler, it's easy to imagine what salacious stories were created here. We walk through a room where there was once a massive waterbed built to take up the entire floor.
This is the beautiful garden. The pond to the left is a really tranquil.
Then over to a serene outside patio, where there used to be a hot tub that musicians could reserve for private use.
And the jacuzzi held about 8. And you'd party.
On the tour, we wind through trippy hallways and go past rooms with wall-sized paintings of dark trees, moons, and mountains. At some point, I pass a 12-foot-tall, fully functioning guitar leaning near a random display of records from the 80s.
There we go.
Eventually, we make it to where the real magic happened, Studios A and B.
She broke down and let me in.
In 1976, Fleetwood Mac spent almost a year here writing and recording their album Rumors. It was the peak of the studio's heyday, and something special was happening. The album would end up selling millions of records. It was the first album Ken Calais had ever produced.
I was going to be living with the band in this house that they had up in Sausalito. I thought, this is going to be interesting.
Calais still has outtakes from those sessions. They take you back to what happened in this very room. You can't hear it in the recordings, but it was a very tense time for the group. Two of the couples in the band broke up in the process of making the album.
First day I knew we were in trouble, I turned around and I saw Christine throwing a glass of champagne in John's face. I thought, well, this doesn't happen all the time in the studio.
But the resort-like atmosphere of the Record Plant was a refuge for the band members.
The reason why we went to the Record Plant, and I think this is a lot of it, was to get away. Get away from the L.A. friends and the lawyers and the all that press stuff. But I think what made it such a great record was that we were secluded in this very safe building. And we were in just this, I mean, literally a recording womb, you know.
By all accounts, the band worked tirelessly, sometimes until 3 in the morning. Calais says cocaine flowed through that studio like coffee.
Because we were working at least 12 hours a day, if not 14, you know, 7 days a week for about 4 weeks straight, maybe 6 weeks. So it was so tired that the coke came in as a, a, a tool.
You make loving fun.
This is another of Kelly's outtakes from an early vocal session.
You make loving fun.
Stevie and Lindsay, I have a picture of them right before we started Rumors, and they were sitting on the lounge, the floor of a lounge of the airport, you know, waiting for a plane, and Lindsay was cross-legged playing guitar. I mean, that guy doesn't exist anymore. You would never see him. He was not a superstar. He was just a regular kid sitting playing guitar. It was just the beginning of their career.
A lot of careers were made at the record plant. Even after Chris Stone sold the building following his business partner's death in 1977, but the industry slowly changed over the years and shifted away from the expensive, all-inclusive recording sessions that attracted artists to the record plant. Today, Jennifer Adler is renting out most of this building to run wellness and yoga workshops. Studios A and B are empty. They haven't had a full-time tenant since 2008, but the building's current owner is hoping to find one.
Take care.
It's hard to imagine the building's future will ever live up to its past. But for those of us who weren't there, the stories will live on in the music itself. In Sausalito, I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
It doesn't pay to try. All the smart boys know why.
What's your favorite tale from Bay Area musical lore? Tell us about it on our Facebook page. We're KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time to step to a different beat. This weekend, hundreds of people from across the state and from as far away as Idaho, Oregon, and Washington State will be coming to Northern California to get a little taste of Texas. That's because this weekend is the 7th annual Tejano Conjunto Festival in Sacramento, a celebration of Latino music from Texas that made its way across the West. Julie Kane and Lisa Morehouse visited a band playing the festival and bring us a preview in this story from our archives. Here's Lisa.
The Gloria family, cousins, aunts, and uncles, is sitting around a kitchen table in Modesto, doing what they always do, playing music together. Year-old accordionist Albert Gloria remembers being a kid and watching his uncle Beto's band practice in the garage across the street.
Instead of running around playing tag, I wouldn't even play, I would just watch them.
This band is called Texas Funk, and they play at clubs and parties around Modesto. It's made up of three generations of musicians. The younger ones were born in California, the older ones in Texas. The music they play is called Tejano Conjunto. Tejano is the Spanish word for Texan. Conjunto means ensemble. The music is a blend of Mexican ballads and German polkas brought together in Texas in the late 1800s. The accordion is the star instrument, and it's joined by bass, drums, and a 12-string guitar called a bajo sexto. The lyrics often tell sad tales of broken hearts and forbidden love, but the rhythm is made for dancing. Like the older generation of the Gloria family, many early Tejano Conjunto musicians and their relatives were migrant farm workers.
My first job was picking cotton at the age of 5.
That's Ramona Landeros, who today organizes the Tejano Conjunto Festival. She grew up in the 1960s without child labor protections.
I remember reaching into the bud of the cotton plant, and my hand was so small that it would fit perfectly.
Originally from Texas, her family traveled across the West, working in fields and living in migrant labor camps under terrible conditions. She says their music made life bearable.
Dad used to say, la música que te trae de la muerte. In other words, that music that would bring you back from the dead. After a long day's work and you feel dead, and then when they'd bust out the accordions, the guitars, the bajo sexes, everybody would be outside listening to the music. Before you know it, they'd start, you know, people start kicking up dust, dancing.
These Tejano migrants brought their music with them as they traveled, which is how it came to California.
I just thought, God, it'd be nice to have something out here, because I know so many Tejanos in Oregon, in Washington, in Idaho, all the places that I've been and that we've worked. I knew there was always Tejanos that ended up staying in those places. And I thought, well, if I was to organize a festival here in Sacramento, I'll bet people would come.
And she was right. Now, in its sixth year, the festival's grown to 3 days. It attracts people from all across the West, keeping the music alive far from its roots. Songs get passed down from generation to generation, learned by ear rather than by sheet music. Younger players add their own touches to old standards, keeping the music vibrant. Back at their kitchen table, Albert and Robert Gloria play a classic polka by Tony De La Rosa. And here's their new version with lots of Texas funk. But Tejano music isn't just played around kitchen tables. It's a major genre with a Grammy category and its own pantheon of stars. One of them, Flaco Jimenez, is headlining this weekend's Tejano Conjunto Festival.
Ya me voy, ahí te dejo en San Antonio. Tu mañita no te la puedo quitar.
This is probably the closest it gets to it being in Texas, where they have these type of events all the time.
Bass player Robert Gloria.
So Sacramento, they have the annual one every year. So people from other states, they can't make it to Texas. They come to California.
Janie Gloria Casucci, the singer for the group called Texas Funk, says they come because the Tejano identity is so strong. She spent most of her life in California, but she still calls herself Tejana.
Born Tejana, die Tejana. No, it doesn't go away. Just because you moved to a different state, it's in your heart.
And you need heart to play this music, says her nephew Albert.
That's what we do this for, the love of the music. We want to do it to be famous. We want to be playing this style of music. You know, that's why we do it, to keep the tradition going and the love of the music that we've been taught from our parents and uncles and aunts and everybody.
For Cross Currents, I'm Lisa Morehouse.
That story was co-reported by Julie Kane. The Tejano Conjunto Festival runs through Sunday in Sacramento. Find a link to the full schedule at klw.org. And that's all for today's Cross Currents. The team includes Audrey Dilling, Alyssa Kapnick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daniel Moore, Leah Rose, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. And speaking of our listeners, we'd really like your input for a show we have coming up about dogs in San Francisco. It's rumored that they outnumber kids in the city. So this has us wondering, what effect can so many dogs have on our city? Tell us how you think dog ownership is changing in San Francisco. Just leave us a message on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And stay tuned for our upcoming dog show.
Dog show!
This is Rin Tin Tiger. The San Francisco folk rock trio has been compared to Bob Dylan, early Bob Dylan, not just because of the harmonica, but also because of their lyrics, which focus on contemporary life. They're playing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on Saturday, where you're likely to hear new songs from their third album that just came out last week. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.